A discussion with Douglas Coleman. Welcome to Create with Trepulix. Hey, it's me. This is episode number 20. Now, I hope you enjoy Douglas as much as I did.
Well, I started out doing live radio in Florida, and that lasted 2 months because there were so many technical problems with the show. And being live, people had to call in at exactly the right time. Things had to be working exactly on schedule.
I know exactly who you got involved with in Florida. I'm sorry to hear that. If you want another show that is a real radio program that is kind of podcast-ish, if you got a pen, there's this guy that's on the West Coast that calls it, is it Radio America? I think it's Radio America.
Radio America? Okay.
Okay. I know some of the people. Actually, I was on a bunch of different programs when I was sitting in your seat being the guest on a program. I was on a bunch of different programs on that network. And really, I met some really nice people that are still friends today. And you know as well as I do, if you've been doing this for a while, that you're now my friend and I'm yours, and we're going to end up calling each other in the middle of the night when we've got problems, because that's just the way this ends up working.
Exactly right. Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, he runs a thing. It's a pay thing, just like the Florida thing, but they give you real engineers. You just bring the microphone and the quiet space to broadcast on. They actually do some of the promotion stuff, which helps, but you know, it's like anything else. Building a fan base is building a fan base. So
how much does this guy charge?
To tell you the truth, I really don't know. I'm more of a fan of regular radio, and I'll tell you really quickly, I started to do a video interview thing. I had never done interviews before. I started doing a video interview thing. I've got HD cameras that I can set up and do my own interview, like network, literally, of same quality, same lighting, same audio levels, and, you know, do it right. Put the money out for the equipment, and then Corona. So I used some of my logo stuff that I had created for the promo of that show and turned it into this show. Went out to radio guests because I had used that before as a subscriber. I was very familiar with it and posted my, I had paid. So anyway, you were doing acting and a musician. What instrument do you play?
Piano primarily.
Oh, cool.
But I do play guitar as well. And I was in New York City, and then I had to go home back to Boston. I'm originally from Boston because of family issues, and ended up getting off that road and going to work in a corporate environment for 20 years. I came back to my music after 20 years. And one of the things that musicians do to promote their music is go on podcasts. I mean, the whole thing changed. You got to remember that when I was doing the acting and the music in New York, there was no internet. There was no such thing.
Sure, sure.
So 20 years later, the whole industry has been turned upside down.
Yeah, thankfully. And I had to learn.
Well, thankfully so. Yeah, because you can do it yourself now. But I had to learn all that over again. I had to start over, learn how the whole trade, digital and this. So anyways, as I was trying to promote my music, I've been getting booked to go on podcasts. Some of them I went on were okay. Some of them were not so okay. And I thought, you know what, I could do this. And I could promote my music as well as help other indie artists promote their music. So I started the show 5 years ago, originally we were just doing music promotion for indie artists. And then one thing led to another, and I got hooked up with PR people in Hollywood, started getting actors and filmmakers, indie filmmakers. And the show just kind of branched out that. And now I got a sponsor who's putting up some cash to get me to do a video version of the show.
Oh, so that's cool.
That's what all the junk is behind me now is we're trying to get set up.
Anyway, so you were doing clubs in New York and also in Boston. I'm actually in Central Connecticut, and I have a lot of friends that are musicians. So I'm
from
the musician scene. Where were you playing in the city?
Oh, God. Mostly in the Village, but we played one place on the Upper West Side on 89th Street and Broadway. That was our regular Sunday night gig. $25 for 4 hours work. That's what we got paid back then.
Yeah. No, I have some professional friends that I know what they get paid sometimes, and it's like, oh my God.
Well, that was lousy money for 1981. You know, you imagine what it is now. But you know, we considered it like a paid rehearsal.
Sure.
Because it was, the atmosphere was so casual, and we played midnight to 4 a.m. And by that time, most of the people in there were completely drunk and didn't care. So we could just kind of, oh, you want to do that song? Yeah, okay. Well, how about that song? Sure, let's do that. And there was no, you know, formality about it at all. There was no structure.
So you were basically doing the jazz, funk, blues set?
No, mostly kind of pop stuff. We did, what was great about the band that I was with is that we did a set list of 50% cover tunes and 50% original songs.
Oh, wow.
And we would just throw them in, you know, like in between Elton John and the Stones, we'd throw in one of ours. And after a while, people started requesting our own stuff, which was great. We loved it, you know. We were just at the point where we were going to make an album, and then my father got sick and I had to go home, and then he subsequently passed away, and then everything changed after that. So
yeah, it's funny how we try to divorce ourselves from family, and then it comes back and slaps us, and it reminds us that we got to be human, and family is really the thing that is important to all of us. I'm sorry for your loss, but you know, it's just the thing that we all go through at times. So were you married during any of this or?
Oh God, no. No, I didn't get married till I was 43. How's that?
Okay. Well, you know, it happens. And the other side of it too is that, you know, there are times in our lives that we just, especially being boys, we need to grow up, and we grow up a lot slower than our counterparts as far as maturing and stuff. So were you living in the city and the Village, or where were you back then?
No, I lived anywhere I could because I had very little money. I started out living in a boarding hotel that was $40 a week.
Wow.
And shared bathroom down the hall. And the bathroom was so nasty that I would wear almost like a full body suit to go in there and shower. it was awful. And then, you know, people's couches and, this guy's got a room to rent, but it's only for 2 months. And yeah, I'll take it. You know, just wherever I could live. And I think I lived in 10 different places in about 2 years.
So did you stay in Boston for any length of time?
Well, after New York, I went back to Boston, and then that's where I worked for 20 years.
Oh, okay. Is that where you're based now?
No, I'm in Las Vegas now.
Oh, yeah, that's a big change.
Yeah. I left New England in 2005. So.
Yeah, and you missed the taxes, man. You missed out. Taxes just went up and up and up, and they haven't quit. You missed. Yeah. You missed out.
Vegas. I'll try to live. Yeah.
Vegas is cool. I've spent some time there, but not in the living side of things. I've been the I got stuck there for a week at a time every year for almost 25 years. So
convention.
Yeah. First Comdex, then Def Con.
Oh, okay. Yeah, lots of conventions come here.
Yeah.
I love Vegas in the winter. It's wonderful in the winter. But the summer, like now, is just, it's too hot.
Yeah.
Air conditioning is going full blast, you know. And I kind of miss the seasons. New England is beautiful in the fall. And I do miss that. But
yeah, it is really uncomparable for the rest of the country. Even going up in the West, it just doesn't have the dramatic fall and the dramatic spring. It really is something to behold. But Boston, the society in Boston, and I would imagine, how is the society in Vegas? I never really got to know anybody there, but
there is no society in Vegas. It's like LA, except in the desert, you know.
That's actually pretty profound.
Well, the one thing, another thing, I suppose, that I miss about the East Coast, you call it society, I call it culture, but I think we're talking about the same thing. And there's a real sense of community in Boston, especially if you go to a Red Sox game. Everybody is tuned into the game, watching, people are talking to each other, having a good time. You go to a baseball game in LA and everybody's on their cell phone. Nobody is looking at the game at all. It's all corporate guys that have season tickets and boxes. And I don't know. It just, there isn't that sense of community in Vegas or in LA as there is in Boston and even New York, I think. There's something about the East Coast that's locked in, probably because it's just that much older.
You kind of find it in, I came from a small town out of the Midwest, and I really grew up around the Midwestern kind of like attitude. And I moved to New England, and the difference is in New England seems to be a general acceptance. The person that you can be friends with and actually have a real friendship with doesn't have to agree with your politics, your religion. You just need one piece of commonality, and that's it. And if you don't cross that commonality, it doesn't matter what the other beliefs are, you're accepted for who you are.
Right.
And the other places tend to, in the community, you got to be a member of the same church or you got to work at the same factory in order to be in that commonality, or you got to volunteer to the same fire department to be in that commonality. And it just seems like it segments off, although we're seeing I think the Neanderthals have taken over most recently in the tribal behaviors that we're seeing run across society.
Yeah, you're not allowed to disagree anymore. That's what I've noticed. If depending on who you talk to, if you disagree, you're just banished from their kingdom.
Oh, that's tribal. No, that's tribal. Yeah. That's tribal. This is pack of dogs tribal.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, they don't understand that what you do when you are in the Midwest or in the West, not far from where you're at, starting about Henderson and going a little bit south, is when you have a wild dog problem, you kind of go out and you shoot the dogs and dig a hole and drop them in where they were. And you don't call the sheriff, although the sheriff might be out there helping you shoot the dogs because there are a problem with everybody in the neighborhood. But America hasn't figured out that there isn't going to be anybody to help you.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on in this country right now, but I don't think I've ever seen it this divided. I was kind of young during the 60s, so I don't remember much of that. But this, so for some reason, feels different. And
yeah, they're not stoned like that. In the 60s, it was LSD, man.
Yeah. And I think there was a better, I don't know, there seemed to be more of a purpose. I mean, everybody was on the side of ending the Vietnam War.
Yeah, an anti-establishment, but the problem, I think, I had a conversation with somebody recently about this same thing, and I think that the romanticization of Marxism is, in its utopian idealism, has been indoctrinated by too many. They left out Smith, and they left out Descartes, and they went straight to Marx.
Yeah, I'm seeing that with a lot of the radical left, and it's coming right out of the, you know, the Marxist doctrine.
The irony is that Marx didn't follow Marxist doctrine. I mean, that was his writings were done before he ended up being in power, and he never followed his own prescription.
You know what the problem with that whole concept is? Is that it doesn't work on human beings. It works on robots. Mm. You can apply that theory to robots working on an assembly line. That if you give this robot this much, you give this robot this much, you give this robot this much, they will perform exactly the same. But people don't work that way. If you put three people on an assembly line and you want 10 widgets an hour, one guy will give you 20, one guy will give you 10, and one guy will give you 5. So what do? You know, you cannot expect equal outcome when you have equal input with human beings. It doesn't work. People have different skill sets. You know, I can play the piano and I can write songs, but I don't pretend that I could run the Boston Marathon and win, you know.
Sure.
But I have as much opportunity to go out there and run if I want to. I get about 50 yards down the road and drop dead of a heart attack. So I just don't see how it's possible that you can apply one set of rules to everybody. And one set of rules in the sense that, okay, we expect you to do this much. We expect you to do this much. It never works. Anybody who's worked in a factory has seen that, you know, where it's been manual labor. You got the guy who will do three times as much as everybody else, you know. The unions tried to even the playing field where everybody gets paid the same, everybody gets the same benefits. And it's good. It's good because it brought the wages up. But the problem with that is that people who only are putting out the 5 when they're supposed to do 10 are getting paid the same as the guy who's putting out 10, and the guy who's putting out 20 is getting the same pay. So it doesn't really incentivize anybody to do more than their kind of minimum. You know, is that fair? I mean, we could argue fair all day long on that.
Sure. And, you know, the question of monetization. Well, you know, now we're settled up with the true model of self-reliance, and self-promotion for everything that we do, which is a really good power shift away from the corporations, I think. I think that corporations helped create this current thing that was going on because of its isolationist idealisms and its reliance and insistence on higher ed that became unaffordable to masses. This situation, like right now, I think it would be great. This is a great excuse to take universities and throw professors specifically online so that not only are they available to more people and they can have more people in their classes, quote unquote, for lectures, but everyone can see what they're saying. They need daylight because being sheltered behind closed doors is what has created this. If you look at who is behind the support system that's massively behind this entire movement, this is white females between 25 and 18.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think
it really is. I mean, it's really odd, but that seems to be who is nurturing the quote movements, including the violent stuff, which really is an anomaly in itself.
So why do you suppose the women have taken up on this? I mean, as far as I'm concerned, women are completely equal in our society now.
No. It's not about the women, though. It's using the model of protectionism with black males. And that's what is being stood up. But if you watch any video that is being produced and put on YouTube and look and see what you see, what races you see involved, primarily what you see on video is white females. You see them marching, you see, and it's not just because it's not camera tricks because they're shooting at themselves. You know what I mean?
So why is that? Why do you think that is?
They're the
ones getting indoctrinated in the universities more than the males?
No, I think that, well, women outnumber men in liberal arts, from my understanding.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. That's true. And there are more women at universities these days.
At any rate, so have you gone back to playing music at all, man?
No, I think my days of playing live are over. I do work in the studio, and I haven't written anything lately because this show has consumed all of my time. I didn't think that it would do as well as it did. I mean, I'm getting all kinds of emails, you know, from PR people and stuff. So I'm connected well in the industry. It would be nice to get more actual listeners, of course, but
sure.
But no, I've been kept busy with this, so music has kind of gone. I knew I wasn't going to play live anymore. That's kind of because I'd have to get a band together and you got to rehearse. And quite honestly, I just feel like my time has passed for doing that. But in the studio, I can still work. If I get an idea to write a song, I'll write a song.
You've developed your show and you've been working for an audience. What is your show about? And how does somebody get in touch with you also? How do they find you?
DouglasColemanShow.com. Very simple. And what was the first part of that question? I'm sorry.
What is your podcast?
Oh, it's a general kind of chat, long form like this. And I just kind of keep it focused on the entertainment industry. So we get musicians, we get authors, we get a lot of filmmakers, actors, I had a ballet dancer. You know, anybody, other podcast guys have been on. Generally, though, I'm getting lots of indie filmmakers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's the ones that I've been primarily getting. And I do an hour show with generally with two interviews. So about 25 minutes each, commercials, and then a little bit of chat from me at the beginning, monologue, if you will. And that's it.
Wow. You know, but, well, I'm really glad that you've got the success that you're getting. That is actually very cool. You have you thought about going over to the terrestrial side and networking it out as well?
Yeah. I mean, I would like to expand, but I've had bad experiences twice now. I was on a 13 FM station network at one time and was paying good money to be on there. They would just simulcast it to all of these different FM stations around the country. And the guy who was running it kept telling me, oh, you're getting huge, huge listening audience. Huge, huge. Except I never saw anything.
Sure.
And I never got
what's her email address?
And I never got any response from anybody. And I know for a fact that, you know, for every 10,000, 15,000 people that might hear you, somebody is going to contact you either with a nice message or a nasty message or something, but somebody will connect with you.
Right.
But the fact that there was zero, you know, feedback made me very suspicious that, you know, where is my show going actually? So I had that, and then I had the live one in Florida, which was another nightmare. So,
well, I tried doing live shows on YouTube, and that was another level of hell that you just
I really love pre-recorded. I absolutely love it because you can go in there and fix things and make it sound crispy, smooth, and nice, and put out a really clean package for people to listen to. Live, you're just kind of, you're screwed if something happens.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I still do live shows across the internet. I figured out how to broadcast to all forms of social media simultaneously.
Oh, wow.
That's how I advertise this, by the way, is I run a on-demand scheduled by my computer 3-hour long video running across Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Twitch, Instagram. You can only do it for 20-minute bursts, so you can record for 20 minutes and then they shut you off and you just got to restart the stream. So
the other thing about live that I've noticed is that people these days are real accustomed or becoming more accustomed to on-demand type schedules.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
when I was doing, when I was doing my live shows, you know, you would have to tune in Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern to listen to the show. And people were like, oh, well, where can I get the replay? That I would get more often, because people weren't available Monday at 3 p.m.
Yeah,
so well, they would wait and want to listen to it at 7 p.m. or something.
From what I've gathered, there are some individuals that like and enjoy interaction, live interaction, and then there are those that like to watch, and you can capture both. There isn't a golden rule or wrong. That I can tell so far anyway. What's really funny though is I do know that YouTube lies and cuts the amount of viewers that people have. The big players think that they've suddenly lost viewership I'm a little player, so I had my I had an ex-wife, my girl, my ex-girlfriend, and my mom watching my YouTube channel, and I'm watching Facebook numbers. I got 500 on Facebook. I got a couple thousand on Twitter, and YouTube says I got one
view,
and I know that I got three people watching.
Wow.
And I got one.
So now they were all watching from different places.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah. No, nothing funny on their computers. My ex-girlfriend wouldn't listen to me anyway, but I know, you know, about how to bypass being tracked and all of that. My ex-wife didn't either. And my mom certainly doesn't. I mean, I can set them up to do that, but what I'm getting at is that I know that there were at least three, but how do you run a couple thousand on Twitter, 500 on Facebook, and have nobody on the largest video sharing platform on the planet? It doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. And I've heard stories from people about getting demonetized for,
sure,
you know, all sorts of different reasons or no reason at all.
Yeah, well, and you know, that whole thing too is your monetization with your arrangement with your own advertisers is really the way that you do it, and or you sell crap. I mean, my whole thing is I sell crap. I do security and I write books and that kind of thing. So that's what this is all about, if you will, is just gaining an audience. Where do you plan on being in your programming? Are you building a network? What do you plan on doing?
Well, right now I'm just planning on doing the video show, and the video show is going to be separate from the podcast. In other words, excuse me. In other words, the people that would be a guest on the video show won't be on the podcast. So it'll be a completely different, you know what I mean? They won't run concurrent. It'll be a different kind of setup, a little bit, be the same type of interview, but we'll have 3, 4, 5 cameras and that I hope will be, you know, it'll pick up a different audience, because right now I put out the podcasts on YouTube, but it's only audio with pictures, you know.
Right.
And I just don't think it's quite as interesting for people. I think people want to see stuff. So
yeah, no, I completely agree with you.
I'm going to try that. And then we'll see. I don't know. I'm really naive as far as how to grow my listening audience, because it's easy to promote music, but I have no idea how to promote a podcast. So maybe you could give me some tips or something.
Oh, I'm fumbling in the mud right along with you. No, the whole thing, I'm going to send you an email when this podcast is published.
Okay.
And inside that email are some publicity tips, things that you should do. But if there's one golden goose, I paid one of the charlatans that is a kingmaker, totally legit. If you've got something that is worth something, his group will get it in front so you can be the ultra famous person that you've always dreamed of. But you got to have the right product. And most people write their novel or their thing and they become their passion and they sell 100 to their family and friends their entire life. But it's not that interesting to the mass population. So what I learned from all this is there is a thing called an email address that is the golden goose. With it, you can do all kinds of amazing things. If you're not familiar with Ed Sheeran, who's a pop artist.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, you should look up his background and see where he came from and how we got there. He makes it very public how he became ultra famous and what he did. And it was a calculated, repeated move.
You said something about email. What was the...
Having email addresses, knowing who your customer base is. And not bombarding them with shit because they don't want shit. If you're going to reach out to your email list, you got to be giving your email list something for sending it out, sending them an email. There's got to be a purpose, and it is not spending money with you. It's to give them something. So if you've got a 50,000 member list and you're not giving advice on how they are going to prosper somehow by your communication, you better be having a freebie coupon or some other item for something that you've spent money on to get them to open the email and appreciate you as a human being. Because if you violate that one single time, they will unsubscribe to you.
Yeah, people can be pretty brutal, I think. One of the things that I've been trying to do with this show, because as we were talking about before, finding good PR for a podcast is difficult. It's easy for music, but it's very difficult for a podcast. Nobody wants to handle it because there isn't particular avenues that they can take it. You know, where do you try to market a podcast?
Well,
I mean, maybe a Sirius FM or something.
Well, there's two sides to it, honestly. And the voice program, I believe, first of all, podcast, everybody and their brother has got a podcast right now. 13-year-olds to 65-year-old widows have podcasts, and everybody is in the soup right now, making really bad audio and going to disflavor a whole bunch of folks. NPR and NPR has legions of grants now that are creating top shelf audio programs and available across all the podcast networks. Stitcher, and as you know, got Joe Rogan, who has the number one podcast in the world. He's got somewhere around 4.5 million listeners. You look at iHeart and Pandora, they've opened the gates to podcasts, having the person that can be the most entertaining have a program on their platform and use their own form of advertising on top of it. So what you have to do and what I have to do is be super entertaining, either entertaining, instructional, you know, the mantra, either you're making somebody more educated, you're making them laugh, something. It's the same trade-off for email.
Yeah, one of the things that I decided right off the bat that I was not going to do was be one of those angry, ranting political shows, because I think there's too many of those anyways. And that's not, I want to provide an alternative to that, because if you can find 50 of those, maybe you can find one show like mine that stays away from that. That was the first thing. And the second thing that I thought might improve my show is the better quality of guest. The more famous the guest I can get, the more people are going to listen to the show. that's kind of the way that I was approaching it, was I'm just going to work on getting a more famous person or more famous person. See, the funny thing is that my promotion has gone well within the industry, but outside the industry, there's like almost zero promotion for the show.
Hey, there's so taxi totally cabs, word of buses, mouth. And bus stops, man.
Yeah.
I mean, you can, totally in Vegas, you can like, can't you buy like a bumper sticker that goes on the back of the porn vans that drive up and down the street?
Well, that's an idea. Yeah. I could get a little billboard or something. Yeah. I mean, that's actually not a bad idea. Because that's something easy to do. I don't know how expensive those are, but
I don't know. I mean, you could advertise on the radio too. That's not really expensive. It's pretty cheap on the AM talk side of things. They're in most markets, and you can go to cable too. And cable TV, since Corona, everything is shit the bed, literally. The price for advertising on LA's cable network and Seattle's cable network is literally peanuts, man. So, oh, really? Okay. So if you can make a 30-second or minute program that is made for TV production and call up the cable systems and ask them what kind of deal, what deal can they give you for 3 o'clock in the morning across the board? You're talking about a couple $100, literally.
Wow.
Okay. In New England, I'll give you an example right now. The car dealers haven't sold any cars and are coming up. The way the car dealer industry works is you buy a car with a car loan from it at the dealer level. You make a loan for usually about $2 to $8 million for your inventory. And then you buy the inventory and you sell the inventory and pay the inventory, the note off with the inventory, and you float literally that loan. Well, right now we're approximately 4 weeks from the banks pulling back their notes on the car dealers. That is one of the reasons why the push towards getting people away from the pandemic and back into the public again. There are landlords and taxation issues that are going to be hit, meaning that big tenants in shopping malls, there are two malls that the Mall of America, which is Canadian owned, looks like it's going to go completely under. Your mall that's in your fashion mall, I heard, was having a problem and looks like it might be going on the chopping block.
Yeah.
The Japanese own that or something?
Yes, I think so. The casinos just reopened a week ago. And so things are starting to get back to, what do they call, the new normal.
Did you ever go to Vegas, man, before the corporations took them over?
Yeah, I was there in 1980 for a couple of, 2 days.
Yeah, it was so much better.
Well, I have to agree. Yeah, it was more of the Wild West back then. Once it became Disneyland,
Disneyland with hookers. Come on. Disneyland
with slot machines. It just kind of lost its flavor, I think. Yeah. But I was going to say with the casinos reopening is that they've put up these plastic partitions between the players and the dealer at the blackjack tables, as well as the plastic partitions between each player. And all it reminds me of is visiting somebody in prison where you've got the wall, the glass thing in front, and you have to talk through this plastic partition. I totally ruins the whole game. I think I'm not a big gambler, but I wouldn't play with that silly thing in front of me, you know, and to the side of me.
You know why we have social distancing?
Why do we have social distancing?
Mm-hmm. Do you know really why?
No, probably not. Why don't you tell me?
Corporate America fucked over the American public and sold the masks to the rest of the world and did not leave any inventory here. The reason that Fauci said that we didn't need masks to begin with is because they knew there was no inventory. The reason that we social distance and wear masks is because your mask is a piece of shit. It doesn't protect you from anything. All it does is psychologically make you feel better. I have a illegal mask in the state of Nevada and California. I have a respirator, and I wear it when I'm in public and around other people because I don't really want to find out about the mutation. If you want to understand this virus, read about H1N1 or influenza or Spanish flu, same bug. I read 3 different germ warfare books long ago when swine flu was out, was the last time I read a book about germ warfare and pandemics because I was concerned enough. And by the way, all of them forecast SARS coming out of China because of its weapons program.
So you think this one came out of the laboratory and not from somebody eating bat soup? I never bought the bat soup theory. I never believed that.
No, but I will tell you that the 1917 virus pandemic died in 1956. If you remember, you didn't have flu when you were a kid. You didn't hear about flu until the 1980s. The reason was that the flu, influenza, Spanish flu, H1N1, same family of bugs, had 1,873 mutations. And viruses, human viruses, don't go backwards. They only go forward. So it went through the population and had killed lots of people along the way. But finally, the virus died. It came out of a refrigerator in 1972, the 1917 version. The Russians claimed that the Americans did it. The Americans claimed the Russians did it. But lo and behold, it started in the U.S. So I think that it more than likely came out of a U.S. fridge.
So what's happening with in Connecticut as far as, are you guys reopened at all?
No, we're waiting for, we've got limited restaurants. We're on the first plan. We have a idiot governor that allowed protesters to coerce the police to close a interstate because there is no sense of civil control with the government. Bars are closed. I need a haircut really bad. Says my dog. Those things are not available to me at all. Yet. And, you know, honestly, the whole thing with this stuff that's going on right now, in particular, it's complete lack of information that is coming back. The social distancing, putting up the shield thing, that was a policy that was written by bureaucrats. It has no scientific. There's nothing about that that includes science.
I think it's disgusting too, because unless they plan on changing that plastic after every person sits down at the table and plays. I don't want to sit there because if they sneezed or coughed, it's going to be stuck on that plastic thing. And it's, ugh, you know, yeah,
it's nasty. And, you know, it's the whole thing with all of this, you see the people wearing gloves. You know what gloves do? The glove picks up the crap and spreads it all over the place. It
stays in the glove. Yeah.
Yeah. It stays on the glove. If you get it on your hands, you can wash your hands.
Wash your hands, right.
And get it off of yourself.
You mentioned that your dog needed a haircut.
If you want to see me giving him a really bad haircut, it's on YouTube. It's called How to Not Give Your Dog a Haircut.
You know, we tried that, and there is a lot more work to cutting a dog's hair than to cutting a human. Cutting people hair is much easier. We also learned that the electric shavers, whatever you call them, are completely different for dogs than the ones for people.
Yeah. I got one on order from Amazon, and I'm still waiting for the damn thing.
Oh, I'll show you mine if you want to see. Let's see. I have to just move the camera around because I cannot pick up my dog. Hold on. Well, the little one I could. Let's see. Yeah, well, there's one. Can you see that one?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Sleeping, yes.
Yeah. That one's the German Shepherd. And let's see, where'd the other one go? Boo-boo. Oh, never mind. He went way over on the other side of the room in his bed, so I'm not going to bother him. But they're good. You know, I have them in the room when I do my show. And as soon as I start talking, they go right to sleep.
No, he bothers me every once in a while. He hasn't been fed tonight, and I was going to feed him in between the break. I've got the way that I record is 3 days a week, three shows a day.
Wow.
Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and I release two or three episodes a week. This week it's going to be three because I had the pop girl did you take the pop girl? The PR agent with the pop artists or the rappers? She was really sweet.
I don't know. What's her name?
AB Ashley Britton.
No, I haven't had her on the show.
Yeah, she was very sweet. And Barbara, which you had on, will be on mine on Friday. Because we're coming in. Brandlin? Yeah.
Brandline?
Yeah.
She was just on last week. Yeah. Yeah, she's nice.
Yeah, she's very sweet. We're running off the same list. I mean, because
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. No, coming off a radio guest. I mean, that's what, yeah. It's kind of what you get. But what's interesting about radio guests that you need to do too is one, he'll insist on not re-enlisting your list. So you need to go back and make a new one before your guests run out because they will run out. And also reach through his list of potentials and send solicitations out of his list of potentials.
Okay. Well, you do a lot more shows than I do because I only do one a week. And once I get the video thing going, I might do two a month for those because it's a lot of work. And unfortunately, my producer who helps me with the podcast, he's in New Hampshire. So he won't physically be here to do the video work. So unless I hire somebody, I'm going to have to do it myself.
Well, there's Dropbox, VPN. You don't need anybody physically in the same place.
Well, I mean, just to run the thing while I'm, you know, because it's going to be sort of taped live, if you will. That we're getting, we just had a dry run dress rehearsal, if you will, today.
Oh, cool. And,
you know, it seemed like it was all right. Once I finish with you, I'm going to go see if I can put the pieces together and make something coherent.
Oh, cool. And, you know, there isn't a right or a wrong way. It's just the only thing that I'm going to say to you that is the golden rule of all of this, and you can watch every YouTuber make the same mistake, is they will take and show what we see here on YouTube in doing an interview, and this has a magic number of 4 minutes, meaning that people will watch this for 4 minutes, but they'll listen to our podcast for an hour.
Hour, yeah.
Okay, and they'll watch this for 4 minutes. Do you know why?
People under 50 have a real lack of attention span these days.
It's not just that. It is that, but it's not just that. It's because everybody from 1960 to today has been programmed with video to have a scene change between 2.5 minutes and 3.5 minutes. So if you watch news, it doesn't matter what news channel you watch, just watch with the stopwatch. Now that you're the cameraman and you understand camera, watch with the stopwatch and watch movies. Movies are 25 seconds longer. News is shortest. It runs to 2.5 minutes and change camera. 2.5 minutes, change camera. 1.5 minutes, change camera. It's either change the view that is there. They might go to B. They may switch to a affiliate or a reporter. And if you ever seen the reporter on the scene, they're no longer ever than 2.5 minutes. That's not an accident.
That seems kind of long, actually, because it seems to me that some of those clips can be 30 and 40 seconds.
Oh, long. Yeah. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. I'm not saying that everything needs to be that long. I'm seeing
you're saying that's the maximum that they're going to, yeah.
Okay. And you're right. Yeah. You're right. You've seen much shorter on a lot of things.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. One guy that I interviewed a few years ago does dance videos on YouTube.
Uh-huh.
And the cuts on his videos are about every 3 seconds.
Wow.
It just bang, 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 bang like this. And I mean, they're nice videos, but I don't know. They kind of give me a headache because
yeah, well,
it's just too much. It's too much. It's like a strobe light. You remember the strobe lights in the clubs? Couldn't stand them, you know? And they're dangerous for epileptics as well.
There are things that you see and you just, they're not palatable to me either. And it just makes you wonder why. And what really will astound you as the violation of everything that I just said works for somebody.
Well, yeah, again, and that we could bring this conversation back full circle to what we were talking about at the very beginning, is that everybody's skill sets are different. Everybody's tastes are different. What's beautiful to one person is ugly to somebody else. So the idea of this one solution to the whole world's problems is a fantasy. It's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it is.
Every time you turn around, there's always a new example of why it won't work. You know, when you're dealing with human beings, you cannot apply one rule fits all. You know, it just doesn't work. You can find something going back to movies or YouTube productions. You can find something that appeals to a certain demographic. I mean, that's why demographics are so important for advertising and marketing, because they know that the 15-year-old is going to be turned on by something much different than the 70-year-old. As an example, the primary demographic for my show is between 40 and 75 years old. Okay. And what I've noticed about people in that age group is that they tend to have more money than the people that are 15 to 30, but they're much less likely to spend it for online content than the people that are 15 to 30.
They're just less likely to spend money, period.
Maybe that's why they have more money. But
that's part of it. No, we all go through the spending stuff of the when we're 20s and 30s. And then by the time we get 40, we cut it back. And when you're 50, you don't buy, you analyze everything that you buy. And it's like, am I really going to want this thing? It's just the things that we all seem to do.
And I'll try to reschedule to come on again, because this was fun.
Yeah, absolutely was. And I'm going to give this guy a call because he was wicked confused. All right. Take care.
All right. Take care. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed this program. And obviously you did if you got to the very end. I would appreciate it very much if you would share this podcast with other folks that you know out there. And please, please leave me a review on iTunes. I really need to know that you exist. I really appreciate it, and I will be making another episode very shortly. Until then, adios. I hope you enjoyed this program, and obviously you did if you got to the very end. I would appreciate it very much if you would share this podcast with other folks that you know out there, and please, please leave me a review on iTunes. I really need to know that you exist. I really appreciate it, and I will be making another episode very shortly. Until then, adios.